Today on Real Ghost Stories Online, phone service goes away, strange noises can be heard in the distance, and buildings from the past seem to reappear and then disappear. Was it the ghost of a man who fell off a home's roof that haunted a young woman, or was it something much darker?
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802 or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You're about to enter the world of the unknown and quite possibly the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
That it is. 855-853-4802, our phone number to call in your real ghost story. You can write it on the website, realghoststoriesonline.com, or even email your audio file to me, tony@realghoststoriesonline.com. Be sure to subscribe, whatever platform it is you're listening to us on. Positive reviews are always helpful as well. Help us grow in those rankings. So if you don't mind, take some time to give us a couple stars there. And if you really like the show, ghostpodcast.com to get all the bonus episodes and advanced episodes of the program. Tony and Carol Hughes joining you once again. And how are you this fine day?
Oh, Tony, I'm very good.
You're always very good. I'm just waiting really for one day where it's like, it sucks. I'm having a shit day. Why did you dare ask me? That's, you know.
God, I'm going to do that next time.
And I'm like,
so shitty, Tony.
Sorry I asked. On to the story. Well, good. As you can tell, still trying to get over the crud, but I think we'll persevere on through as normal. But I swear, I mean, I don't know what, I mean, there is no like magic cure for bronchitis, is there? It's just kind of like,
obviously not.
You're going to deal with this until it decides to go away. That's been my experience. I don't know if there is like some sort of, you know, I'm interested. It's fun to kind of throw this out there to the audience, because every once in a while you get like some sort of really interesting suggestion. It's like, drink snake oil or something of that nature, and it helps you a lot. And it's not just for being on the air. I don't want like a temporary, oh, it'll help you talk for an hour. This is going to make it go away type thing. There was one.
Good luck with your snake oil.
Exactly. Well, I was thinking of some artists over the years. You've heard the olive oil trick, right? I've heard some artists have given that as a right before you jump on stage, if you got a cough, if you got something going on, do a shot of olive oil, and it helps coat the throat to like get through that short little period of time. Now, I don't know that it's healthy or good for you, but that it's kind of a go-to thing for some folks.
It kind of makes a little bit of sense.
Yeah. Never tried it.
It seems like it'd be weird.
Like when you're out of olive oil, it's like, oh shit, what do we got around here? It's like, what about corn syrup? Or
I'm gonna try this Crisco.
Yeah, do a shot and you like do vinegar and by mistake. It's like, oh, that would probably make it 10 times worse. That would burn vinegar. Yeah. Yeah, I can't imagine Crisco.
I'm gonna research this next week. I'm gonna have some really interesting remedies for you.
All right. Hopefully, maybe one will help. 855-853-4802 is our phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your real ghost stories with us. Let me jump over here to our first letter of the day. Take a quick sip of tea. That's bursting with country fresh flavor. Okay, next, first letter, it says, hey, Tony and Carol, this is Tony and Savannah again. It's been a while since I've written in to the show. A few months ago, I sent you a couple of pictures of a shack we ran into while in the mountains of North Georgia hiking. I sent you guys the pictures again by email. A couple of friends and I went up to the mountains to do some hiking and explore unplugged for a day or two. It was truly refreshing. We left all cell phones in our 12-passenger van that we'd rented for the weekend. They would have worked anyway, or they wouldn't have worked anyway, since we were in the big Blue Ridge Mountains and cell service was non-existent. We did take with us two walkie-talkies. We just got into the mountains a day or two after a light snow and had come through the area, but it started to warm up a little, and that crisp, cool mountain air whipped around us and made us feel alive and invigorated. Shortly after walking about 6 or 7 miles, we came to a shack that seemed to appear out of nowhere. It seemed so out of place, it seemed like a kind of place that the Unabomber would have loved to shack up in. Anyway, it just felt off. We were all getting this vibe from it. That said, go run, fast. After snapping a few pictures, we left. We decided that it was about time to start heading back before nightfall. Those temperatures in the mountains plummet at night, and you can't see your hand in front of your face. Besides, we all knew mountain lions and black bears roamed these woods. As we got even closer to reaching the van, our walkie-talkies went off with long, extended hisses, as if someone was trying to break through to communicate but couldn't. That 6 or 7 second hissing noise seems like an eternity now, and those eerily quiet woods. The daylight was just about gone, and we heard what sounded like a branch break. We all turned at once, glared back into the complete darkness as if it were a mountain lion. We better to keep moving quickly, and so we did. We finally made it back to the van. We locked the doors, the van immediately, turned on our phones, which seemed like all at once, still no service. We knew we'd have to get closer to town before reception would kick in. We started on our way down the mountain road into town, and after about 3 or 4 miles, we were at ease. We had called our loved ones to ensure them were all still alive and well. As we drove, we saw a pair of kids walking the road alone. As we passed them briefly, we backed up and rolled the window down and asked them if everything was okay. They answered back quickly, "We're trying to get to our house just down the road." They back in the direction we just come from. As we were trying to be good Samaritans, we asked exactly where they lived. I thought about contacting their parents, but again, no cell phone service yet. As we drove, they at the same time said, "Stop here." We looked at each other, confused. There was no house here, just our tire tracks, where we had left about 15 to 20 minutes ago. As one of the other guys flipped the cab lights on, the kids' eyes became quite apparent. They were black as night, but these kids were a little older, about 12 or 13. Did we invite black-eyed kids into our van? Does a van count, or do they have to be invited to a home only? The kids ran out of the van laughing eerily while going into the woods. We jumped back into the van and drove off with slightly more soiled pants than before. We didn't go back hiking in those woods again. Before we left, we stopped by the local library and did a little research about the history and the bluff that was right up the alley. We found out that the shack we saw in the woods was once inhabited by a family that had their home torched in the 1920s. All were burned alive inside. But what scared me even more is that this town is still home base to the KKK, and they sometimes have rallies right in that area. What do you make of that?
Okay, that's totally creepy.
Yeah.
But I'd like to know, like, if that's all there was to it. Like, it seems like if you had those kids in your van, do they kind of follow you home a little bit?
Yeah, I mean,
no,
it's...
Or is that it? We saw them, we let them into the van, then that was it. Ghost encounter over.
Because quite often with the black-eyed kid stories, what you end up having is something bad happening to the people who encountered the people. I would assume that if something else had happened, it would be written about. But that would just be very disturbing, not, you know, to see the black-eyed kids and then knowing, if you know the lore of, oh, and now something horrible is going to happen to you. I guess somewhat reassuring when nothing happens, but my God.
I mean, can you reason with the black-eyed kids?
No, they're evil. The black-eyed kids, it's like an omen or a curse or something. And the thing is, people have these things where they show up on, it typically is, they show up on the doorstep of the porch. They're very needy. They need to use a phone. They're making excuses to come into the house. And that's what the lore of it is. But I wonder with it now being something that has gotten out there over the years, and a lot of people talk about this, just how easy it is now to get colored contacts that can make your eyes look really freaky. If I was really wanting to be an asshole teenager, I think that'd be a great way to do it. You just go and knock on people's doors with the black eyes. And
oh, I bet you could.
Although these days, you really are you know, just asking to get shot by doing something like that.
But, you know, if I saw two kids.
Yeah.
Going down the road by themselves, I would stop.
Sure.
I mean, that's just crappy.
Yeah.
They do that to you.
Yeah.
They set you up for evil. It's not right.
I think there's something to those stories. I don't know what it is. It's one of the more elusive ones that we get. 855-853-4802 is our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online. Let's go over to our next letter. It says, "I don't know where to begin because this haunting went on for many years. In 1984, we were nearly finished building our home. Our only child, Sari, was 2 years old. One day when we went to check on the progress of the home, Sari would wave hi to the man on the roof," she said. "My husband and I thought it was funny because no man or men were working on the roof or anywhere on the property that first time she said it. When the home was nearly finished, Sari would stand down at the end of the hall, look past me at the other end of the hall, and play peekaboo, smiling at someone behind me. The second time she did, that's when I began to believe she saw the man. Our builder witnessed her do this. He told us that the master carpenter working on the roof over the garage fell off our roof, had a heart attack, and died. The carpenter was an older man whose arm had been cut off below his elbow. Our builder told us that the carpenter was able to hold the hammer inside his elbow, place a nail on the hammer, and then hammer it in. Once we moved in the home, and on the day Sari and I were alone, she was playing in the foyer near the doubled front doors, and above these doors was a half-round window. Sari looked up and began waving at the man. I looked up and told her there was no man there. She continued to wave and say, "Hi." Later that day, I went into the laundry room off the foyer, which was between the kitchen and office. I began to iron clothes, and Sari was now playing near the kitchen, just out of my sight. She was talking to someone in the kitchen, although I only heard her voice. I was not paying attention because by this time, she was always talking to the man. Suddenly, she ran into the laundry room, eyes the size of quarters. She grabbed me around my legs, hugging them tightly, screaming, "No, hurt mommy, no hurt mommy," over and over. I whispered to her to sit, stay there, and do not move. I wrapped the iron cord around my wrist to use as a burning weapon. I thought someone must have entered the house in the back sliding doors near the kitchen. I slowly crept around the door of the laundry room looking towards the kitchen. Slowly, I walked around the corner into the kitchen, ready to fight for our lives. My heart was pounding so loud I could feel and hear it. No one was there, thank God. I questioned Sari about what she was seeing, but being two, she just held me tight and cried, unable to explain. We left the house that afternoon and went to Grandma's to calm down. This was the first time I began to believe the man was probably not the ghost of the man who fell off the roof and died. There's so much hell we lived through in that house for several years. It upsets me even to write about it. I'll say that before we finally sold that house, my husband and I were so terrified that we thought of calling the church in. We decided against it because we knew an exorcism would bring reports from everywhere, hateful skeptics, and then we would never be able to sell the house. All of it happened, and it's true. Our family would tell you it all happened, and I would take any lie detector test you want. So there you go. The man falls off the roof. Dark stuff starts happening. How do you... I'm just kind of going back to page one of you're getting your house built, and then you find out from your contractor that one of the people who was working on it died, and this is your house. You've not yet gone into it to live in it. You can't really back out at that point.
Yeah, that would be horrible.
It's like, you know, when you buy a house, you can find out that information, and you can just choose, okay, no, I'm beautiful house, but really not cool with someone who died in it. When you're building and that happens, you're screwed.
And she's right about if she'd had an exorcism or something of the house,
yeah,
a cleansing of the house, you know, people could find out, then how do you sell it?
Yeah, especially in 1984, that wouldn't be looked upon as like, ooh, this is exciting. It would be, they're crazy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would venture to believe, unless there was some sort of very dark history with the master carpenter that no one knew about, it was probably something else or someone else that was showing itself.
That's what I would think. You know, because I think that when you hear about someone who died building the house, you just assume that's who it is.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm with you. I don't think it was probably him.
I think sometimes it's easy to assume that stuff. The same reason it's easy to assume, like, oh, it's a family member that's haunting me because they recently died, if you start having some sort of experience. But that's not always the case. It just may be, guess what? It's your turn in life to have a haunting. And it happens to line up around that time.
Well, and I think that when you lose someone, you go through this very emotional time where you kind of let your guard down and mm-hmm. You're just a little bit more open to that.
Sure. Yeah, I would agree. I think in that those things do tend to feed on when you're in a very emotional state. Mm-hmm. And I think it's also, it may be part of feeding into the just the reckoning with the loss and going through the grieving process. And you're kind of sitting there bartering a little bit going, you know, if they could just come back for a day or something. And then if something is there ready to jump in and, you know, make itself known, even though it's not the person, that could be the prime window to do it, to make someone think, oh, yes, they're coming back for that day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like you just want to have some sort of sign from them. So you're trying to be really open.
Yeah.
To something from them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I totally get that.
Yeah. 855-853-4802, our number at Real Ghost Stories Online. Let's go over to a caller. Hi, you're on the air.
This is Mercedes. I was calling. I have a story for you all. I have actually many, many different stories. I always hear people say that they are sensitive, and I would like to probably second that because I just, my father was very into while I was growing up, and I just never questioned him. I always believed him because he just was always, I would always see things with him. Just like miraculous things, not paranormal, I guess you couldn't say. So I guess I'll go ahead and start out my story. This was back when I was in school, and I had a history. This was for history class, and I needed to, so this was an extra credit project that I had to do. And I had to go to the Shakespeare Museum, which was in D.C. So on my way there, pretty regular day, nothing crazy happened, just regular day. I took the metro from Maryland into D.C., and it's actually a really nice sunny day. And so I go, and I'm just wandering around because there's part of my project is that I have to go around and look around and fill out some questions for the different objects that were actually in the Shakespeare Museum. So I'm going around and I'm looking at all these different relics of those times and taking my notes and whatnot. Didn't feel anything weird or nothing. So I went ahead and I went into the gift shop because I was like, hey, what kind of cool trinkets I really, really love to see what's out there for me to buy, maybe take home something. So I'm attracted and really drawn to this bookshelf area. And as I'm walking over, I literally see a book come out of the shelf and fall right on. I was like, whoa. Now, mind you, this place, in the, like, the bookshop, there was windows, but there's nothing open. It's like, it's not like the AC wind could actually pick up a heavy book and drop it from the top of the shelf onto the floor. Soon as this happened, before I could even think about what just happened and process what just happened, this woman in all black, with like really, she's an older woman, she has all black hair, and she has like really, her eyes were just like, they weren't red, they were like, around her pupils were really red, as if like she was like super high or something, I don't know. She just had like really red, where the white part of your eye is like really red. And then she says, oh, that tends to happen a lot when I come around. And before I could even like question her, because I, you know, I went down to pick up the book to put it back, I was like in mid-speech saying, that's so crazy, how did this happen? I look back and she's gone. Like, I went to go look for her because I really wanted to be like, wow, like, what do you mean this happens when you come around? Like, I've always been really drawn to, like, the paranormal. I've always, like, felt stuff. And at that time, I was just like, whoa, this is crazy. Then to find out that night, they were going to be doing, like, the old 1800s, like, witch music thing. I don't even know how to describe what it is that was going on in that theater of the Shakespeare Museum. They were just like having, it was like old 1800s folklore music type of thing deal. I don't know. That's what was happening that night. So I was just like really intrigued. I was like, wow, it's so crazy. And then I just like, it always kept it always stayed in my mind. Another part of this story, which is like now it gets kind of crazy. Okay, now it gets a little bit more crazy than what I just said. As I'm walking home, and this is kind of scary, I was raised, I'm trying to give you a little bit of backstory about me. I was raised Catholic. My father, though, my mother was a devout Catholic. My father, on the other hand, more on the spiritual side, he practiced Santeria. If you don't know what Santeria is, it originated in Cuba back when the slaves were in Cuba. They still wanted to practice their rituals, but they had to hide it from their, I guess, quote-unquote masters, because their masters wanted them to practice Christianity and Catholicism. So what they did was they disguised saints as the Orisha, which is their ancestors, which are basically the entities in which they pray to and, like, the different spirits, I guess you could say. So that's what my father practiced. I was always curious because I'm just always been a child of hope and always been just always a believer of. I'm not a skeptic at all. I've always believed in other things, other dimensions, other entities out there. So as I fast forward, right after I got out of that museum, I'm walking back to the metro. As I'm walking back to the metro, I seen a Virgin Mary statue in, like, clear day. The Virgin Mary had, like, I don't know if you guys ever seen the movie Stigmata, but it's, like, the Virgin Mary, she was bleeding. Her eyes were bleeding, and then she had, like, something in her, like, private area of blood, and it was, like, bleeding. It just looked really, like, evil. And then I had to, like, blink a couple times. It wasn't there anymore, but I seen it, and I knew what I seen. It was, like, a clear picture, and, like, I wasn't high or anything. I didn't, you know, I shouldn't have been seeing that. But that had occurred in a time of my life where I kind of had, like, it was kind of dark in a way. I was going through a lot of things. I was homeless. I was living out of my car and stuff, and I was in an domestic violence, abusive relationship, and it was like a dark time for me, but I made it. I'm in a way better place, and yeah, so that's one of my stories. I have a lot of other stories, like a lot of other stories. I've never actually, like, seen an entity, like an apparition or anything, but like, now come to think of it, I wonder if the woman that I seen was an apparition. It wasn't like she was transparent. She looked like a person. Like, she looked like I could go up and touch her. Like, she wasn't see through or anything, you know. So yeah, sorry, it kind of brought me back to when it happened. Kind of got the chills. So. Yeah, anyways, I'll definitely call back and tell other stories because I got a bunch of them, and yeah, I got a lot more. I probably will hang up and call again. But thank you guys for everything that you guys do. I'm a 90s baby, so I have been watching Unsolved Mysteries and Ghost Adventures and all type of paranormal shows since I was little. Like, I've been so interested, and everyone thought I was like a nerd, and why am I watching this? And I'm just so happy that I can listen to you guys. I listen to you guys like every day at work. I just love you guys. You guys are great. Thank you so much. I'm not an EVP just yet. I just started listening to you guys. But I think I'll make that move like ASAP, because you guys are great and I want to support you in any way. So thanks, you guys, so much. Love.
That would be a very dark experience to have, especially when you're going through something really rough and a really rough patch. Just the imagery and everything that was expressed there, not just your average, you know, friendly, oh, this is the old man who used to live in the neighborhood ghost.
Right. Although the story about when she's at the Shakespeare Museum,
mm-hmm.
that made me think, like, How many times do you suppose you actually saw a ghost and you didn't realize it was one? What if they were, like, had that woman be dressed more normally, maybe she'd have been like, oh, yeah, whatever, and not really thought as much about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder if you see them more often than what you even realize.
I've wondered about
certain
that.
Certain people.
Yeah, people who have that ability. I think everybody has that. But the folks that do, especially when you're like in a really crowded space, like a theater or a mall or anything of that nature, and there's just all these people coming and going, and you can't really focus on every single entity you're seeing moving around, living or dead. How often are they mingling in places like that where it's just high energy because there's so many people and you have no idea? You know, I've had times where I've been walking and I do not feel like I can see them or not. But there's times you're kind of walking through a place and there's someone that just kind of stands out, and not for a good reason. It's just kind of like, well, that's odd. And you just kind of keep moving on. And I don't really think a lot of them in my case have been ghosts. But I mean, how often do you think that happens?
Yeah, because I was just thinking about that when she was telling that story, because I'm like, I wonder if it happens more often to her mm-hmm. than what she even realizes.
Yeah. Especially
not to freak her out or anything like that, which I might have just done.
That just added to a little weight to her story and something new to think about. But I mean, especially like, we always hear stories of like haunted theaters and things of that nature. How many times is someone on stage and the house is somewhat full? Is every single person sitting there watching always a paying living customer?
Exactly.
Yeah, I think it happens more frequently than we are, than we're aware. They just kind of blend in. I think if I was a ghost, I didn't want to be noticed. That's your best thing to do. Blend into a crowd. And your chances of being noticed, the same way as being noticed in real life, when you're blending with the crowd, it goes way down.
And it could even be like one of those people you walk by who just catches your eye, and mm-hmm. you kind of make eye contact, and then you move on.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And then you turn around and they're not there.
Great idea for a movie, Tony.
I think it's been done.
We are on to something.
I think it's been done a time or two.
God dang it.
That's going to wrap up this episode of Real Ghost Stories Online. Thank you guys for listening. If you like our show, keep us on the air. Become an EPP, extra podcast person on our website at ghostpodcast.com. Go to bonus episodes of the show, their advanced episodes, and more. $5 a month is all it is. Or you can sign up for a full year if you want. Claim that spirit flask. That's a great extras there for you. Ghostpodcast.com. Until next time, for Carol Hughes and Tony Brewski, thanks for listening to another episode of Real Ghost Stories Online.